So I'm talking to Mr. John Elisa.
Victor.
Sorry, Victor Elisa.
John's my brother.
Okay. Formerly of the Metropolitan Police.
That's right, yes.
Okay. And you were the diversity officer?
I was the head of diversity and inclusion, my last job in the Met.
Okay.
But before that, I was a borough commander in Haringey.
Okay. So what are you doing now?
I'm doing, so I'm retired, I'm doing lots of charity work.
Okay.
I'm doing public speaking, both in the media nationally and internationally, and attending conferences.
Okay, so I'll come to the question of the media in due course.
Okay.
But I want to ask you, and actually we begin with the media, there was a report recently that suggesting that the major threat in the UK right now, terrorist threat, is from white supremacists.
Mm.
And the report suggested that part of that threat is the use or the copying of by white supremacists of ISIS strategies, media, video, use of media communication and this type of thing. And what I'd like to ask is, do you think there might also be some synergy, negative synergy, between white supremacists and persons in what we might call the African supremacist community, persons in the Pan-Africanist community, who have been pushing for reparations since at least 2001, when they put reparations for transatlantic slavery on the UN agenda at a UN conference in South Africa. It was just a talking point before that.
Yeah.
Barbados sponsored it and put it on the UN agenda.
Right. So it's a question that the push for reparation by African nations is a...
It was actually initiated by the Caribbean.
Right.
Specifically by Barbados.
Right.
Actually, as I recall, some African countries resisted the effort initially.
Right.
Some have bought into it
since then.
Since then.
So,
but the question is, do you see that being perhaps catalyzing some of this, the response? Might the white supremacist, white nationalist activity be a response to that?
I must admit, I don't know the details that much of the request for reparation or the move for reparation from Barbadian. But I think, well, let me just start by actually questioning our terminology.
Okay.
When we talk about white supremacists, when there are terrorists who kill people.
Okay.
I never hear us talking about brown supremacists.
Mm.
Yeah. And the reason I'm saying that, we still even when people commit atrocities, we're still giving the white people who commit atrocities a pedestal that almost justifies them. You're a supremacist, you kill people. If you're a brown terrorist, then you're a terrorist as described in the derogatory term. I think we need to be very clear about how we do that and using that language and almost giving an explanation and excuse for white people when they commit atrocities and kill lots of people.
Okay.
So in the sense of the instigation of white supremacy, I think they've always been there.
Yeah.
And I think the media has always fed the issue about, you know, terrorism and linking it to religion. Now, when we talked about, let's go back to 15, 20 years when we're having, as we describe it, the Troubles from Northern Ireland. We were calling some of those people freedom fighters.
Yeah.
We were not describing the terrorism that the IRA were carrying out in the same pejorative connotations. We were appalled by them. Mm. We weren't describing it in the same pejorative way that we're describing when we then moved on to Islamic terrorists.
I'm not as familiar with the... I know a bit about the IRA and their claim that there were freedom fighters. I don't know that. I'm not sure I can think of instances where the British press referred to them as freedom fighters.
No, no. The British press didn't, you know, but they were carrying out atrocities. What I'm trying to say, yeah, is sense of, you know, we demonise, you know, Islamic terrorism. We put them in a state where the misunderstanding, they're coming over to change our culture, they're coming over to take away our way of life, they're coming, yeah, over to undermine Western democracy. There's still groups of people carrying out terrorism. So, yeah, to go back to your question, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
The move for reparation is an instigation for white terrorism. I think that's always been there.
Yeah.
And I think it's been underreported. And even now, when it is reported, it's reported in a way that looks for excuses.
The white supremacy.
The white terrorism. I'm going to call them white.
White supremacist terrorism.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the white terrorists. White terrorism.
White terrorism.
They're not supremacists. They're not supreme in any way, shape, or form.
Agreed.
They're killers.
Agreed.
The way that,
agreed,
other terrorists are killers.
Yeah.
So I think they've always been there. And I think, you know, you've had a mass killing that's captured the media's imagination.
Yeah.
They've reported it, you know, because it's happening in a country where you wouldn't have expected it to happen, but it's almost like a peak and it drops again. So we'll go back to Norway, Anders Breivik.
Yep.
Absolutely shocking.
Absolutely.
But over time, that's forgotten and that's not referenced to anything else. It's almost like a individual incident that's an aberration, but there's no link between Anders Breivik to
everything. You see, at the time, I think, and after you check the media reports, the fact that he attacked the Labour Party, a Labour Party, the Norwegian terrorist, I don't use his name. The fact that he attacked a Labour Party, Youth Labour Party,
convention,
yeah, pointed to the wider implications. I reported on that,
right,
and I certainly tried to say he was not acting alone.
No.
He was... supported at least indirectly by the climate of reaction against Barack Obama's presidency and this belief that Labour and Obama were Labour, Obama was a socialist aligned with Labour, although in the States certainly many Black Americans thought he was more capitalist than South Carolina. The attack in South Carolina.
Is that in the church?
On the church.
Yes.
On the church.
Yes.
There again, there was, when I reported on it, I put it within that context, and I think some other people might have as well.
In the context of Barack Obama.
And the whole this whole assertiveness,
mm-hmm,
of the Pan-Africanists since 2001.
Yeah.
Because I think that was a landmark, putting reparations, which had up to then been just a talking point. When Dudley, I think his name is Dudley Thompson, a Jamaican lawyer who had been, he's now deceased, he had been campaigning for reparations for decades.
Yeah.
He begged us in Barbados at a Pan-Africanist think tank, people from all around Africa, Pan-Africanists from all around the world,
yeah,
met in Barbados in 2000. We hadn't even heard of the UN conference coming up in 2001.
Right.
But he said, there's this conference coming up, what we need is a country to put this issue on the agenda.
Yes.
A group can't do it, an organization, it has to be a country. And Barbados volunteered.
Right.
Why I'm particularly interested in stressing this is because at that time, I think there was an opportunity to have it put on the agenda in a way that would be measured.
Yes.
And because it's a complex issue.
Yes, yes.
And I suggested to my colleagues at the Commission for Pan-African Affairs and members of the Pan-African Movement of Barbados, of which I was a member, that before we go to Durban talking about reparations, we need to discuss among ourselves the roles of blacks,
yes,
in the slave trade as traders. A vote was actually taken not to discuss it.
Right.
So when 9/11 happened, I felt or that was the second hijacking, because I thought the first hijacking was of the reparations debate.
Yeah.
And that's the issue, that the same way the white supremacists and the white nationalists hijack whiteness.
Yeah.
I feel that there are people within the black community hijacking blackness.
Yeah.
And it's these two hijackers, black and white, that don't want a dialogue, don't want a discussion.
Yeah.
They want war.
Yeah.
And they say it time and time again, because they think they got the better guns, the most guns,
yeah,
and they think they can win.
Yeah.
Or at least they can.
With violence.
I don't know.
Yeah, but you've got one extreme who's looking for a redress of a wrong that's been done to them.
Yeah.
And then you've got the other extremists in terms of the white terrorists who are actually just saying then we don't want you to have any form of redress or any form of power.
Yeah.
So, you know, the black extremists are not asking for power. They're just asking for a redress of the suffering that their forefathers have gone through. So there's different motives in driving them. But I also think that the timing of the emergence of the white terrorists, who appear to act individually, but they are links and they are contacts between them. Or they may not act underneath one umbrella,
yeah,
but they act underneath one ideology, and yeah, there must be contact between them in terms of actually...
And that's been proven.
Yeah, in supporting each other.
It's been suggested, at least, that Breivik had contact... I mentioned his name. That Norwegian guy had contacts with people here,
yeah,
yes, in this country.
Yeah.
It's been disputed, but there was apparently some evidence of that.
Absolutely. So, you know, I don't think that's not unreasonable. That's got, yeah, to be reasonable, that people don't act alone.
Yeah.
You know, certainly when they carry out the activities, they don't act alone. In terms of the planning and the preparation, they don't act alone. So there's a link going on between all of them, which is probably not as obvious as there may be with, yeah, terrorist groups like ISIS or Al-Qaeda, but there is that link going in there, because that's the way these groups work. The person who carries out the acts is not the person who's acting alone. So there's that,
yeah,
in terms of similarity, there's that measure going on. So I don't think it's a actual response to the seeking of reparation. I think white terrorism has always been there.
Yeah.
Working together has always been,
yeah,
there.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And I think, you know, the not the resurgence of them, but certainly the emergence on a consistent basis, I think is probably just coincidental in relation to the asking for reparation. I think the planning would have gone on before then, but since then, I think that would then add to their sense of anger,
yeah,
to then carry out these activities, yeah, carry out these atrocities in different parts of the world.
Another angle that I'm thinking about, especially, and this is specifically in relation to what happened in New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
I note that it was an Australian who did it.
Yes.
And I note that he claims allegiance to this white Christianity, the Knights Templar, and this whole mythology.
Yeah. I was going back to the Crusades.
Yeah. I thought it's interesting that this should happen at a time when an Australian cardinal, a very high church Roman Catholic cardinal,
yeah,
was convicted of pedophilia. And it was almost, from my perspective, like this Australian was trying to deflect attention,
right,
from the crimes of the white church,
yeah,
or the church,
yeah,
Christianity.
Yeah.
Let's not call it white. to deflect attention from that.
Let's catch up. Send me some points.
I will, but yeah, for the meeting.
Yeah.
To deflect attention from that, maybe have a show of strength.
Yeah, but he did. He
Your
has.
Thoughts.
He has, maybe he hasn't said, but certainly, yeah, there has been reports that he'd planned to carry out this terrorist attack, not in New Zealand, but I can't remember where now, where his original plan was to carry it out there.
Mm.
Because he ended up in New Zealand and spent 2 or 3 years there. Mm. So the plan had been going on for 2 or 3 years before the attack at Christchurch. New Zealand hadn't been the country of his original target. So, and I guess because he'd been there, then he carried out the attack there. So again, there's bits of coincidence going on in there between, you know, the judgment against the cardinal,
yeah,
and the attack taking place. And sometimes these people look for justification for their act.
Why I mentioned,
and it's incongruous.
Why I mentioned the cardinal as well, because in that report I mentioned this week on the BBC, they mentioned, I think, something about tracking these white nationalists and supremacists through their activities around pedophilia.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, that ties in with the cardinal.
Yeah. Oh, it absolutely, it may well be.
Sorry. That was a call. Oh, we're still recording.
Okay. So I would imagine then that probably just adds to his sense of grievance.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have thought he's been in... I mean, I've known that he'd have probably been following the case all the way through.
Mm.
In a way that might have influenced where he then decided to carry the attack in the end, i.e. New Zealand as opposed to going to somewhere else, and it may have influenced his timing. In the sense, if he's been planning for 2 years, I'm going to do it now, because all this is happening, that actually adds to my sense of grievance. But going back to the point that we were talking about, in the sense of these people don't work alone, if that report is making those links with paedophilia, then again, it's a network of people who are keeping in touch with each other all the time.
On the dark web, in many cases.
Absolutely. So that contact gives them then the opportunity to discuss a number of other things other than paedophilia. And if he's discussing, you know, terrorist attack, and again, it goes back to the point when we're talking about these people, instead of describing them as lone wolves, follow a similar network and group planning and support the way that ISIS, Al-Qaeda did overtly, or probably the IRA going back further did overtly, the work as a collective group. Carrying out the activity, are the individuals who carry out the activity, again, very similar to ISIS and Al-Qaeda, predominantly more Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
You know, so the small group of people carried out the attack, and then we piece it all together. There have been links and planning and preparation and support going on all the way through. And I think it's the same with the white terrorists.
I'm thinking of the attacking on the church in South Carolina, the black church again.
Yeah.
Because there is this white Christianity versus black Christianity dimension as well. So that would fit in from that angle as well. And that goes back to the time when Martin Luther King Jr. when they were bombing the churches.
Yeah.
The black churches.
Yeah, and you know, maybe they saw it as a way of a place where the black people met to
organize.
But organized to give themselves support in defense, not organized to attack.
No.
So, and it's this bit about let's destroy, you know, their foundation, their base, their ability to be able
to sustain themselves.
To sustain themselves, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and again, that's notions of power. You don't have to necessarily subjugate someone to something bad, but if you prevent them being able to become self-sustaining,
their resilience.
That's just as devastating as killing, which killing is bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. It's a really interesting conversation.
Yeah. Conspiracy theories.